Have you ever had a moment in time in your life where something has taken place between you and another person or you and another entity, and you were expecting some kind of a response to come back, but you weren't quite sure what the response would be? You thought about it, and you might be thinking, well, the response could be positive, the response could be negative, it could be good, it could be maybe not so good. Here are some possibilities that you might like to hear as far as responses from somebody. This is the Publisher's Clearinghouse Prize Patrol, and you have won $5,000 a week for life. I'm sure everybody in the room would love to hear that phone call. Good news, you don't need a new transmission, it was just a little low on fluid. Good work, you deserve a raise, and I'm putting through the paperwork today. Congratulations, you have the job and you can start Monday. Nice report you did for the class, I'm going to give you an A. 2 weeks off for the school for the Feast of Tabernacles, no problem. Have fun, bring back some pictures so we can show the class. Anybody who's had kids can appreciate that one. Good news, the cancer is definitely in remission and this kind just doesn't come back. News, great news for somebody. The car was totaled, but amazingly, nobody got more than a few scratches. Now, these are all pretty big things in life, aren't they? Huge things. How about some little things, maybe less dramatic, but equally meaningful to those being the recipient of it? Something like, I'm happy to pick up my room, Mom. I know it makes you happy. Of course we'll come home for Thanksgiving, Dad. We look forward to it. Good job, son. I'm really proud of you. You're the best daughter a family could have. Or how about maybe a simple statement like, I'm really sorry. Or how about the simple one of just, I love you, to hear that from somebody. Let's turn over to Psalm 37. Psalm 37, I noticed in the hymns we sang this morning, or this afternoon, many if not all of them came from the Psalms. And the sermonette was from the Psalms, so it looks like today's God's day for putting us into the book of Psalms. Psalm 37. Each of us probably has things we would really like to hear come our way in our life. Maybe today in the sermon we can look at some points along these lines that may make a difference in each one of our lives. Over the last couple of years, we've been discussing how that, and it was mentioned again in the sermonette, the more we rely on and the more we trust in God and really believe that, the easier life seems to become. Once we accept the fact that we are not in charge, but that God is in charge, we can accept things a bit more readily. I mean, if we truly do understand that, and if we really truly do believe that, you can accept almost anything that takes place in your life because you know God's in charge. You've done what you could, and God took over and did the rest. It's been my observation in life that to hear words that you want to hear, like some of the ones I mentioned a little earlier, you typically have to live up to them first. Very few bosses will say, that's a really good job, if we're not actually doing a good job. Very few people will say, I love you, if you aren't at least a little lovable yourself. And if you think about it, we live in a world full of hollow praise and shallow flattery. Sometimes people say things that just doesn't have virtually any meaning. And sometimes we'll hear something come from somebody in such a way that it makes us wonder, why would they say something like that to me? Maybe something that's real flattery or something like this, and you're thinking, that person doesn't think that way about me. Why would they say that? And of course, naturally, your radar goes off because you know you're probably being patronized, and that doesn't sit well with us. So how can we hear the words that we want to hear in life and know that they're genuine? Along with this, how can we honestly obtain the desires of our heart? As we've learned over the years, in many ways, David learned through the school of hard knocks. He went through some tough times in his life because of some of the mistakes that he made. Psalm 37 is a summary of some of the things that he learned from some of those lessons that he went through in life. Let's take a look at Psalm 37 and begin in verse 1 and see what David gleaned from his life. Psalms 37, verse 1. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity. It's interesting that David starts with this statement here in Psalm 37. Because he's going to repeat something very similar to this multiple times. I didn't count how many times, but it's probably close to 10 times in this one psalm. And there's a reason that he starts with this. Do not fret over evildoers, nor be envious of workers of iniquity. Probably all of us have suffered from this at one point in time in our lives. We may be suffering from something like this now, where we see people seemingly doing things bad, maybe doing things that are evil or wicked, and they seemingly are getting away with it. And it really irks us. Sometimes it really bothers us a lot. David knew this. David felt this. David understood this. So one of the first things he says in this psalm is, you know, don't fret over this. Don't worry about the evildoers. Don't worry about those who are workers of iniquity. He says in verse 2, for they shall soon be cut down like grass, and wither is the green herb. Keep in mind that God himself, Jesus Christ of the Old Testament, told us, vengeance is mine. He said, I will take care of what's going wrong in the world. And eventually, he's going to show us multiple times here in Psalm 37, I'm going to take care of that. And if you can convince yourself that I'm capable of doing that and really believe it, you'll make your life a whole lot easier to live. Keep in mind, in due time, God says, I will take care of all the wrong in the world, but I'll do it on my time frame when it's best for them and best for me. Verse 3, trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. It's interesting in Psalm 23 that Dirk read, where David talks about lying down in green pastures. He causes me to lie down in green pastures and brings me by waters that flow openly and available all the time. Here, David says it in a little different way. He said, trust in the Lord and do good, dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. What he's saying is, remind yourself every single day, just like you take in food to sustain your strength and energy in your life, remind yourself what God has done showing you faithfulness, what he's done for you in your life, how he has turned things around. Every single person sitting in this room has had God faithfully intervene in their life, or you wouldn't be here. He opened your mind. He gave you the opportunity to know and understand things that many people in this world cannot grasp. And I wonder how often we really appreciate how powerful it is to know and understand what we know and understand. God says it's words of life. And David's saying, you know, feed yourself on this faithfulness. Every day, give some of it to yourself. Remind yourself of what God has done for you. Delight yourself also in the Lord in verse 4, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. God says, you know what? If you just don't worry about the evil doers in the world, don't worry about the wickedness in the world that you see, don't worry about somebody seemingly getting away with something that you're observing and it gets you all worked up. He said, do good, delight yourself in the Lord, dwell in the land, feed on his faithfulness. He said, if you just can calm yourself down, and that's really what it's all about, is calming yourself down. It's like those sheep, before they go to sleep, they've got to be calm, or they can't lay down because they're worried about what's going to happen around them. The exact same thing happens to us in all of our lives. God is saying, focus on me, focus on what I'm giving you to live by. He said, if you can just do that, I'll give you all the desires of your heart. Think about something that you desire in your life. I'm sure every single person in this room can think of something. Maybe something to do with health. Maybe something to do with finances. Maybe something to do with just your mental capacity, your mental stableness of your mind. Whatever it is, God says, I can give that to you. I want to give that to you because I want you to feel full. I want you to feel like I've taken care of you. If we take the protection in God, trust in God, belief in God, and follow his ways, if we really truly believe this, God says all of a sudden a peace starts coming over you because you know I'm in charge. You can't fix everything. I can. And I will when the time is right. And he says, if you can do that, you can have what your hearts desire. Verse 5, commit your way to the Lord, trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. He'll make all of these things take place, like we heard last week. We also need the endurance factor with all of this. Being patient, knowing God is almighty, and that he is always going to be there for us. Eventually, we all need this to come to pass in our lives, so we can get to this point of really being totally trustworthy of God, and totally believing everything that he tells us. He shall bring forth your righteousness as the light and your justice as the noonday. Sooner or later, our good behavior, our caring acts, our trust in God is going to be exemplified by the way we live our life. And sooner or later, people around you are going to see it. They're going to notice it. They're going to observe it. Sort of like the security guard that I was telling you about from Maui last week. She was so impressed with the way our people were behaving and acting at the feast, she came inside and said, who can I give an offering to? I have never seen people like this before gathered together in such a large group and be such wonderful human beings. I want to make a donation to this church. And she gave us $100. We had never seen that or heard of that before, ever. The song leader mentioned it, and every one of us are sitting there shaking our heads. I've never heard of anything like that before. But brethren, this is what God says can actually start to happen. When we start living more of God's way and start doing what he's asking us to do, people eventually start seeing us in action, and it affects them. Rest in the Lord, he says in verse 7, and wait patiently for him. Not anxiously, patiently. Letting it go because you know he's in control. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Here he's bringing it up again. Why do you think David kept bringing this up? One, it negatively affected him. People were constantly after him, wanting to kill him, wanting to do something differently to his life. And he also knew, and God inspired him to write this is what many of us suffer from. We are so concerned about what's going on around us. And we're so concerned seeing people get away with stuff. And it agitates us. It makes us angry. It makes us upset. And David said, that's not good. We're going to see that a little bit later on here. He said, because these people who bring these schemes to pass, he said, God is in control of everything. God's in control of everyone. He can make everything and anything work out to good. No matter what it is, no matter where it is. We don't need to worry ourselves with those doing evil and wicked in our lives. Forget them. God will take care of them. Cease from anger, he says in verse 8, and forsake wrath. Do not fret. It will only cause harm. And think about it. When you get upset or worked up towards somebody else, or upset or worked up towards something else, who suffers? You. Because you harbor it. You think about it. You stew on it. You get angry about it. And then we take it to somebody else and share it with them. And we want them to get angry. We want them to get all worked up. We want them to join our bandwagon so we can be angry together. And they make you more angry. You make them more angry. And next thing you know, you're sick. Sick to your stomach. And David's telling us this. He's probably experienced this himself. Let it go, he said. Let it go, and God will take care of all of it. Verse 9, for evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. Again, he reminds us, I will take care of the evildoers. They will get what's coming to them eventually. And I know some of us in our carnal nature, I'm one of them, I'd like to be there and watch some of this sometime. I mean, especially when you've been around somebody who really, really did you wrong and hurt you, and you know it was just malicious. You just like to know that God actually did take care of it. But God says, you know, don't worry about it. Let it be. I will take care of it. But then he points out again this patience thing, this endurance thing. But those who wait on the Lord, those who are patient about it, they don't worry about it. They don't let it work them up in life anymore. He said they're going to inherit the earth. Notice how many times we're told by David to wait on the Lord, to be patient. Again, because he probably suffered from this. He knew how anxious he would get. He knew he wanted to take control. He wanted to take things into his own hands. He wanted to fix it. He wanted to make it right. And God wouldn't let him do that. And that's what happens to many of us. But you know, this patience eventually pays off in spades, as we've been hearing here about this inheritance. Verse 10, for yet a little while, and the wicked shall be no more. Indeed, you'll look carefully for his place, and you shall be no more. Sooner or later, everyone's going to get what's coming to them. And he's saying it's going to come to a point in time where you might want to find somebody doing something wicked and something evil, and you can't even find them anymore. Because God got rid of all of them. It's not going to exist anymore at some point in time in the future. He's trying to tell us, I'll take care of this. I'm going to take care of it so much that you won't even be able to find wicked around anymore. Then he goes on with more good news. He said, but the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. Why would he say that? The abundance of peace. Delight themselves in the abundance of peace. Because if we can let go all this angst, stuff that bothers us, whatever it is, people, issues, things, if we can get rid of that and not worry about that, think about waking up every morning totally looking forward to the day, having no fears, no anxiety, no stresses, no pressures, no angriness, nothing wrong. Everything's great. Life is wonderful. What would it be like if you could wake up every morning like that and not have any of those other stresses of life tormenting you? David's trying to point out we can. But it first comes from trusting and believing in God and knowing that he will take care of everything. Let's drop down to verse 16. A little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked. One of the reasons is that when we are close to God and close to Jesus Christ and their ways, we don't need as much in this physical life, because our contentment comes from mentally, emotionally, psychologically, spiritually, just knowing everything's under control. It's like a child when mom and dad say everything's going to be fine, and they believe it. And a smile comes across their face, and they move on with life like there's no problem, no worries in the world. But God says, I can make this work because we can become content with less. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken. He's bringing this up again. But the Lord upholds the righteous. He said, eventually, I'm going to pay them back for what they've done. Maybe what they've done to you, what they've done to other people. Their arms are going to be broken. God is going to make those who intentionally do wicked and evil hurt. He's going to get their attention by hurting them. And hurting them for hurting you. And God said, if you can believe that, if you can trust in the fact that I'm capable of taking care of that, and stop and think about it. When we take it into our own hands, what we're doing is we're saying, God, you can't handle it. I have to. And it's a slam to God. But when we can come to that point, realizing, saying, you know, God, you take care of him. You take care of her. You take care of it, whatever it is. When we seek his righteousness, he's there for us, no matter what is going on in our lives, even when things turn upside down. The Lord knows the days of the upright, and their inheritance shall be forever. Notice how David keeps referring to this inheritance of the righteousness. He, like Paul, knew there was something better waiting for us on the other side. And this is one of the challenges I think we face as Christians. If we don't have a clear grasp and a clear understanding and a clear belief and appreciation of what that inheritance actually is, Christ called it the pearl of great price. It's worth anything you could pay for it. When we don't grasp it from that perspective, how can we possibly expect to get through the struggles of this life? Why would we push ourselves if we really don't grasp how powerful and how great this inheritance is? David got it. Paul got it. Keep in mind that God even took Paul in a trance, in a vision, to the throne room to show him, this is what's waiting for you up there, David. This is what I've created for all of mankind. You need to understand this because of what you're going to have to go through. One of the things that I've been praying about more than just about anything on a consistent basis over the last several years in my life is, God, make this real to me. Make me see it, feel it, touch it, taste it, smell it. Make it so real that I could visualize it in a dream and just want to reach out and grab it. Because then we've got something we visualize that we can struggle for, we can fight for, we can go after. But if it's not there, why would we push ourselves? And this is why David keeps bringing this inheritance thing back up. He said the inheritance side of it has to be part of your being. And he's trying to encourage us, and so was Paul. We'll get there in a second. Verse 19, he said, they shall not be ashamed of the evil time, and in the days of famine they shall be satisfied. In other words, God's going to provide no matter what happens. No matter what's going on in our lives, God's going to take care of everything that we have need of. And it's really interesting because slowly but surely I've been starting to make strides in this area. And stuff that used to really get me worked up, it doesn't even bother me anymore, let alone not get me worked up. I mean, I can think of things that used to just agitate me and don't even bother me anymore. And it's really cool because there's a peace that comes over because I'm not worried about it. First of all, if thus happens, it may not be what I want to have, but if this happens, I know it's because it's probably better for me in the long run. I just don't see it right now. And if I get what I'm after and I think what should happen really happens, then I'm really grateful to God thinking, wow, this is really cool. You and I are on the same page with that one on a rare occasion. And it's one of those things, no matter which way it goes, I'm okay with it. I'm still working on it in some areas, but some areas I've really made some strides here, and it is so encouraging and so helpful. Drop down to verse 23 now. You can almost hear David's emotion when he's conveying these encouraging truths to us about God's desire and God's relationship that he wants with us. Verse 23 of Psalm 37, the steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. God is actually thrilled by our good behavior. God is not a God not in touch with reality. God's sitting up there on his throne and literally observing every aspect of your being. When you do good stuff, he gets excited. And he says he starts ordering your paths of your life. Have you ever thought sometimes in your life, how could this, something this good be happening to me? How could I have made such good decisions and made all these things come together in the right way, right shape, and it's just like one thing after the other for a period of time? I believe it's something we don't even know God's doing. God's putting thoughts in our minds. He's giving us words to speak, and we're sounding like this wise sage, and we're like, wow, where did that come from? It's because God looks at us, he watches us, and when he sees us striving to be righteous, he strives to make us more righteous. He encourages us, he lifts us up. He delights in this, he said. Though he fall, verse 24, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. No matter what happens, God's always there to grab us. Even when we do something really stupid, which is primarily what really causes most of the trauma in most of our lives, the decisions that we make that aren't really good decisions. God doesn't just discard us. He says, okay, let's pick you up, dust you off, maybe smack you on the forehead, get your attention a little bit. Say, okay, let's try this over again. Let's back up a step. That wasn't a very good decision. I'm sure you know that now. Let's go back and try it again. Constantly wanting us to know and understand, trust him. Believe in him. Literally know he's standing there waiting to help, no matter what it is in our lives. And then David goes on and he says this, I have been young. Verse 25, I have been young and now I'm old. So I've gone through my whole life observing this, yet I have not seen the righteous ever forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread. No matter who the righteous is, David said, I've never seen that God ignore that. Never. He said, I saw it when I was a young man, I saw it when I was a middle aged, and I saw it when I was an old man. I've never seen God's righteousness forsaken. God looks at every good behavior, act, thought, word that comes out of our mouth. when it's positive, uplifting, righteous, encouraging, it's, man, God just loves that. It's like us watching our children grow and develop into something really wholesome. And we just can't wait to help them get more wholesome and be better at it, better than ever before. God's the same way. He said he is ever merciful and lends, and his descendants are blessed. It just doesn't happen to us. It's a promise of blessings to us, to our kids, to our grandchildren, our great-grandchildren. It just keeps flowing down the road for our benefit. God says, I just want to keep pouring it out on them. He said, it may not look like it all the time, but I'm there, and I'm going to do something with them for you because of your righteousness. It sort of makes you want to be more righteous if you have children. Don't you agree? Because what God may bless them with or not bless them with may have something to do with how we've reacted and worked with God and our relationship we've built with him. A promise of blessings. Hearing those good words in life and having our heart's desires, what God says waiting for us. Verse 27, depart from evil and do good and dwell forevermore. For the Lord loves justice and does not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever, but the descendants of the wicked shall be cut off. Again, reminding us, I am going to take care of the wicked. Anybody who does things that are nasty and mean, I am going to take care of that. You don't worry about it. He's repeated that multiple times already in this one psalm. David also shows us that the wicked eventually get what they deserve. The righteous, in verse 29, he said, "Well, and shall inherit the land and dwell in it forever. The mouth of the righteous speaks wisdom, and his tongue speaks talks of justice." God even blesses us in our thinking and speaking when we're serving him his way, trying to do it his way, trying to consciously be a good Christian, thinking 24/7, how can I be better at this? What can I say? What can I do? How can I act? The blessings just keep on coming. Verse 31, the law of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall slide. Again, like we discussed last Sabbath about having God's word in our hearts, not just in our brains. Having it in our brains doesn't do us any good. It's got to be indelibly embedded into our hearts, a part of our being, right down to our core. And David's saying the law of God is in this kind of a person's heart. They want to be like God. They want to be like Jesus Christ. They want to emulate their older brother because they know and they believe God is there and God wants to bless them. God is constantly looking for ways to bless us, to encourage us to be more righteous so that he can bless us, to encourage us to be more righteous. It's a very positive cycle. And God is absolutely looking at how we're doing in that cycle. Drop down to verse 39. This sort of sums up the whole message of David in Psalm 37. Verse 39. But the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in the time of trouble. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them because they trust in him. That's the bottom line, gang. Trust God. Believe God. And put all of our cares on him. Let's go over to 1 Corinthians 4 now. 1 Corinthians chapter 4. We have seen a lot of what God said he would do for us when we are trying to do his will in our lives. As I mentioned earlier, David learned some of these lessons the hard way. And elsewhere in the Bible, God basically tells us, you can learn it by reading it in the Bible and believing how these guys learned. Or if you don't want to learn it that way and you want to learn through the school of hard knocks, I'll take you down that path too if you want. Anybody who's ever been down that path will tell you it's not the path you want to take. As I stand before you, I learned that lesson the hard way in my life. You can either buck the system or you can follow the system. And again, if you buck it, sooner or later it will buck back. Because God said, I'm not going to start something in you and leave it. I'm going to keep working with you right down to the end. And what David is trying to show us in Psalms and what Paul's going to show us here, listen, learn from us. Learn from the mistakes that we made. Save yourself some trauma. Paul also learned these lessons, some directly from Jesus Christ, as he was taught by him for 3.5 years, but also from some of his own life experiences. Paul went through a lot too, an awful lot. He came to understand that we can receive the praise of God in our lives by pursuing his way continuously. I'm sure we'd all like to be like Abraham and hear God actually say, "You are my friend." Think about that. God or Jesus Christ literally saying to you, "You are my friend." Or like Abraham, I'm sorry, by like David, being told that you're a person after God's own heart. Imagine God coming up to you and saying, "You know what, I've enjoyed watching you. I've enjoyed observing you, and I know you've been through a lot in your life, and you've been through trauma and trial, but you've stuck through it no matter what. You are a person after my own heart. You're like me, and I love it." Those are words I think all of us would love to hear. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 4 and see a bit of Paul's perspective on this. Here Paul is talking about being judged in our lives of service, judged by other people and even judged by ourselves. But he knew the only real God of all things was God himself. A real judge of all things was God himself. Verse 1 of 1 Corinthians 4. "Let a man so consider us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. Moreover, it is required in stewards that one be found faithful. But with me it is a very small thing that I should be judged by you or by a human court. In fact, I do not even judge myself. For I know of nothing against myself, yet I am not justified by this, but he who judges me is the Lord." Now, when you read that, the way Paul wrote it, it can be a little bit confusing, but Paul didn't even trust the assessment that he had of himself. Verse 5, "Therefore judge nothing before its time until the Lord comes, who will both bring to light the hidden things of darkness," nothing is going to escape, "and reveal the counsels of the hearts." Wherever our heart has been, wherever our life has been, wherever our life and actions have been, God says, eventually, we're going to talk about it, especially those things that you've not fully repented of. Then he says, then each one's praise will come from God. Paul's telling us God eventually will actually praise us. Let me reread this passage from another translation, which I think brings it more to life. 1 Corinthians 4, verses 1 through 5 from the New Living Translation. Listen to this and see if this helps you understand the perspective that Paul's trying to convey here. Verse 1, "So look at Apollos and me as mere servants of Christ, who have been put in charge of explaining God's mysteries. Now a person who is put in charge as a manager must be faithful. As for me, it matters very little how I might be evaluated by you or any other human authority. I don't even trust my own judgment on this point. My conscience is clear, but that doesn't prove I'm okay. It is the Lord himself who will examine me and decide. So don't make judgments about anyone ahead of time before the Lord returns. For he will bring our darkest secrets to light and we will reveal our private motives. Then God will give to each one whatever praise is due them." We can and will receive words of praise from God Almighty as well as Jesus Christ when Jesus Christ returns to this earth. If we are one of the first fruits who have made it into God's kingdom, we are told in the Bible God is actually going to praise us. He's going to say some very kind words to each and every one of us. He's going to say some very encouraging words, words that are probably more encouraging and more powerful than you will ever hear in your life. And it's going to come directly from him to you for your service to him. Flip back a few pages to Romans chapter 2. Romans chapter 2. We're going to look at another way that we can receive praises from God, those sweet words of encouragement and blessing, because the Bible tells us that they are there waiting to be said about us, words that we can hear. Paul rewords it a bit here in Romans 2 to show us again what we heard last week about fulfilling our commitments to God in Jesus Christ. Remember when Christ used this parable analogy with the good seed in the good ground? The point that he made about that? Let me repeat that. Having heard the word with a noble heart, noble and good heart, keep and bear fruit with patience. Christ tied it to the heart. Paul will weave the heart concept back into the equation here in Romans chapter 2. And he's going to link it to the praise of God. But he's going to use the concept of circumcision to make the point. Romans 2, pick it up in verse 26. Romans 2:26. Therefore, if an uncircumcised man keeps the righteousness requirements of the law, will not his uncircumcision be counted as circumcision? In other words, even though they may not be circumcised, as they start acting and behaving like a Christian, God's going to look at them like a Christian because they're doing what God asked them to do. And will not the physically uncircumcised, if he fulfills the law, judge you, who even with your written code and circumcision are a transgressor of the law? He said God's going to actually turn the tables on people somewhere down the road. For he is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is circumcision that which is outward in the flesh. But he is a Jew who is one inwardly, and circumcision is that of the heart, in the spirit, not in the letter. Who prays is not from men, whose praise is not from men, but from God. This is also very revealing when you reread it in the New Living Translation. I'm just going to read Romans 2, verses 28 and 29 from the New Living Translation. Listen to this. For you are not a true Jew just because you were born of Jewish parents or because you have gone through the ceremony of circumcision. That doesn't mean anything. No, a true Jew is one whose heart is right with God. And true circumcision is not merely obeying the letter of the law. Rather, it is a change of heart produced by the Spirit. And a person with a changed heart seeks praise from God and not from man. That's a totally different focus in life. Let's go to 1 Peter 1. 1 Peter chapter 1. Physical circumcision was a sign between God and his people back in the day. It was another way to permanently mark their obedience to God. Now it's a spiritual circumcision. Having a heart that is obedient and loving and kind, which has the law of God actually written on it. A heart whose motivation is to do God's will. That's the bottom line of what this is all talking about. God will praise, as we've seen, God will praise such a person who lives authentically from the heart, as opposed to some outward show of spirituality. I think we all know what that means. One of the saddest things I've ever experienced as a minister of God over the last 40-some years is when I've had the opportunity to counsel and talk to children of the church as they become teenagers and maybe young adults, and they're dealing with issues of life. And they tell me things like, you don't know my parents. You know what my parents want you to know about them. They are completely different when they're not at church or not around other people in the church. You know, brethren, when that is true, that is probably about as sad a thing that can happen ever in the life of a family. And this is what Paul's talking about here. You know what? You can act one way in front of people that, because they know they're going to see you, and act a different way when you're not around people, He said, you're fooling yourself into really believing you're a Christian because you're not a Christian. There's nothing in your heart. There's nothing there that's motivating you to do right no matter who's looking. Here in 1 Peter 1, Peter shows how our faith now comes into play to receive the praise and glory from God when Jesus Christ returns. 1 Peter 1, let's look at verse 3. 1 Peter 1, verse 3. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to his abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. Peter first links everything back to Jesus Christ and his sacrifice, and that's so meaningful in our lives. Verse 4, to an inheritance, this term inheritance again, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled that does not fade away, reserved in heaven for you, who are kept by the power of God through faith for salvation, ready to be revealed in the last time. Remember how David talked quite a bit about our inheritance as well back in Psalm 37, waiting for us? Peter talked about it. Paul talked about it. David talked about it. Christ talked about it. How real is that inheritance to you? How much do you want that? Is it real enough to have you actually desire it, seek it, want it, and basically be willing to do anything to get it? That's what all this is tying into. Peter tells us we are kept by the power of God through our faith. Verse 6, in this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. And we also learned back in Psalm 37, God says, you know what? When you're going through these trials, yeah, they're going to knock you down, but they're not going to knock you out. I'll be there to help pick you back up, no matter who caused the trial, even if you caused it. I'm there to pick you up. I'm going to dust you off, pat you on the back, kick you in the butt, get you going again. We're not done here. He said, I want you to learn from these mistakes that we make, from these trials that we have. Peter's talking about the same thing here. In verse 7, he ties it all directly to our faith. Verse 7, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. Not just will we hear praise from God as the resurrected saints because of our genuine faith and belief and trust in God, but he said there's going to be glory and honor too. Glory in the fact that we're going to be resurrected to a glorious body just like Jesus Christ. We're going to look just like him from a spiritual perspective. And all that glory that he has, you know how it talks about him glowing? He's so bright. That's what we're going to be like. God says, I'm going to give that to you. And I'm going to bestow upon you honor. He's going to do these things, brethren, because we struggled. Because we made it finally to the end. We didn't quit. We didn't give up. And we didn't let the cares of the world drag us down and beat us up. As we get ready to close, let's go to Matthew chapter 25. Matthew chapter 25. Again, we'll learn from Jesus Christ himself. And here are some of the words that probably each and every one of us would love to hear at some point in time in our life. Here in Matthew 25, there are two powerful parables that Jesus Christ uses to teach his disciples. And it talks about our relationship with him, our relationship with God, and our relationship with each other. The first one is the parable of the talents. He gave one, five, he gave one, two, he gave one, one. And then Christ said, go about your business. Each one was given different talents and expected to do something with them. Again, like we heard last week in last week's sermon. Verse 19 of Matthew chapter 25. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. That day's coming. So he who had received five talents came and brought five other talents, saying, Lord, you delivered to me five talents. Look, I have gained five more talents besides them. I put the talents you gave me to work, and I produced something with it. And his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. He also, who had received 2 talents, came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Look, I've gained 2 more talents besides them. His Lord said to him, same thing. Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. You notice something there in these 4 verses? Christ gave 1 5. Christ gave another 1 2. It didn't matter. What mattered is what they did with what they were given. It doesn't matter who's got more talents, more abilities, more anything. It doesn't matter who's more educated. What matters is what we do with what God has given us. That's what Jesus Christ is after. Talk about words we'd really like to hear. All of us can only hope and pray that by God's grace and his mercy and his guidance and direction in our lives, one of these days we're going to hear these words spoken of us too by Jesus Christ when he returns to this earth. Brethren, I believe that we all have words in this life that we want to hear. Maybe in some cases, words that we need to hear. Some we want to hear maybe from our wives or our husbands. Some we may want to hear from our parents. Some of the words we might want to hear from our children. We all crave the love of our families and the respect of our peers, whether at work, at home, community, wherever it is. We're made up like that. We need that. But if we trust in the Lord and put him first and live like he shows us how to live in the Bible, he will give us, he says, the desires of our hearts. He will give us words that we need to hear. He will praise us. He will glorify us. He will honor us. Not only when he returns, but even in this life today. But greatest of all is to live this life, as we've just read here in Matthew 25, so that each and every one of us might hear these words from Jesus Christ himself. Come, you blessed of my Father, and inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. He's got something he wants to give each and every one of us in this room. He said, I hope you're ready to accept it. Have a wonderful day.